Good afternoon, and thank you for joining me. Again, my name is Chris Dyer, and I'll be the host for the next hour. In case you're tuning in for the first time to the Talent Talk radio show, it's actually a good time to turn in. We're going to do something a little bit different today. But generally, the radio show features a wide range of guests who are uniquely talented and care about talent themselves. So in this show, we talk about talent in those two ways. First, as it relates to success and uncovering the secrets of really talented people like my guests today. And second, we talk about talent in relation to human resources and how HR leaders find the best candidates today for their companies. Hopefully you see how that works. The word talent has a couple different meanings in the business world, and we really look to explore those two areas as best we can. My guests generally include CEOs, entrepreneurs, consultants, coaches, HR executives, really from all different industries across the country. So when I'm out at networking events or industry conferences, I tend to have the privilege of meeting some inspiring leaders. And we created this forum to allow you to listen in on our dialogue and hopefully learn some practical advice that will impact your own career in a positive way. Before I get to my guest today, I do want to thank those of you tuning in live. Don't forget, you can submit your questions via Twitter right now. Just tweet at PeopleG2 with the hashtag TalentTalk with your questions, suggestions, or anything else you want to tell us. My producer, Mike, will feed me the nice comments and the best questions during the show. Don't forget, you can also listen to our podcast on iTunes. We usually within a week, we have this out on iTunes and Android and anywhere else we pick up your podcast. And we have just about 22,000 CEOs and HR leaders downloading this program each week. And we really appreciate your support. With that said, let me get today's show started. My guests are a pair of sisters who are fraternal twins, as we were just talking about before. And they both ended up in HR. So we're going to get to that and their stories. But we have Julie Wolf, Director of HR for SAA, which I'm going to try to say is Schlemmer, Algazi & Associates.
Great job.
All right. And I only practiced for 6 hours. And Lisa Pinkard, Vice President of HR of Implicity.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Yeah, both guests will be with me the whole hour. So let's go ahead and get started. Julie and Lisa, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
So maybe we'll start with Julie. Tell us a little bit about yourself and about your background and, of course, how you got to where you are now with your company.
Sure. I've been in HR about 20, 25 years now.
Just a little bit of time.
Okay. And started in the personnel department, quote unquote. That's what HR was back in the days.
Right.
For a company called Price Club, which is now Costco.
Mm-hmm.
So I got my feet wet there for about 6-7 years. It was a great place to get started.
That's a great company.
Great training program. Learned the nuts and bolts. And also it was a union environment, which is something a little different as well. So I learned a lot about union contracts and started kind of my basic knowledge there. Eventually transferred and went over to Paramount Pictures, which is a big leap, I know.
Right.
It was a show manager position, so it was still HR in nature, negotiating deal memos, safety, hiring crew, with a lot of more technical stuff involved mm-hmm. as well. And then transitioned to consulting for Implicity, where I worked with my sister, Lisa Pinkard, and eventually landed where I am now, which is Schlemmer, Algazi & Associates. We're an architecture and interiors firm, 4 locations, about 150 people.
Oh, that's great. And Lisa, how about you?
Yeah, similar start. Started at Costco, or Price Club, now Costco. I was there for about 10 years and decided to hop over to Best Buy when they were booming. So did a little HR work, operations work in Best Buy for about 3 years and landed at Implicity. I've been there about 15, 16 years now. Absolutely love what I do. The consulting piece is very exciting. We have all types of outsourcing available through our company, everything from payroll, benefits, workers' comp, safety, HR, you name it, we do it. So it's a big variety, and I really like that. We have about 5,000 employees under our umbrella as far as who we consult for and about 250 to 300 clients. So it's always something new every day.
I might be jumping the gun here, but how long ago was it when the two of you were working at the same time?
It was about 6 or 7 years ago, because I've been with SAA now a little over 5. It sounds about right. I think it was like 2 or 3 years where we worked together right about there. Everything blurs together.
Right.
I think it was about 2 or 3 years. It was fantastic. I loved working with my sister. Yeah. We had different clients, but it was good to relate to one another and, you mm-hmm. know, all of the challenges of consulting from small to medium to large size firms. We had a good connection. We were able to help each other. And I think our styles are a lot the same, too. Very similar. Good checks and balances between the two of us. So if she'd want to be maybe a little bit more aggressive on a termination, I'd kind of have to say, oh, okay, wait a minute. Let's think through this and vice versa. So definitely a good match.
So you could kind of jump out of the good cop, bad cop realm with each other.
Exactly.
And that's great.
We do that when we buy cars. We do that everywhere we go.
Probably with who you're dating or marrying.
Exactly. It's a package deal.
So obviously, looking at your employment history, you've worked, you know, had some shared working experience like we talked about. But what is it that you that took both of you down that road of human resources? And maybe we'll start with Julie.
You know, we talk about this a lot, how we got where we are. And I really believe that it has to do a lot with how we were brought up. Sure. I think we come from a small town in the Midwest. And
which town is that?
A very small town in Ohio called Woodville.
Is that like one light blinking in the middle or
barely
something?
Barely that.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. So the work ethics were there. And I think we just got to be very honest people. And I think that we liked helping people. That was instilled in us when we were kids. And I think that transferred over to our adult lives. So the ability to actually go to work and help people and not just focus on numbers or process, I think it was just ingrained with us to be a good person and help. And that's kind of what HR was back in the day, right? The personnel department.
Right.
It was the complaint department. It was throwing the parties.
Very tactical and deal with problems. And
Yeah. So I think that was I think it's just the love of people. I think we grew up in that small community where we knew everyone. Everybody loved everybody. Everybody helped in time of crisis. So which kind of carried over. We both went to school for similar kind of sociology, psych majors, but we just ended up around people and loved it. So we just kind of followed where our heart took us and we landed here.
Well, it's nice because, you know, generally everything is our parents' fault. But when it turns out good, right, then it's a good thing to have.
Right, right.
So, Julie, after working as the HR manager at Costco Price Club, I remember having my Price Club membership that was red and blue and they changed to Costco and all that. But back in the 90s, you took that position as a show manager at Paramount Pictures. But then you kind of found yourself back into that more HR role with Implicity. So this was an obvious detour from where you are now. When you found out, you kind of your way back to HR, what was it that drew you back in? What was really that thing that maybe was different from what you were doing at Paramount to the previous job and what you're doing now?
Sure. You know, it was a hard decision. I really enjoyed what I was doing at Paramount, but I was ready to make a bigger difference. And consulting, I think, gave me that opportunity not to touch one TV show or three TV shows, but to touch 30, 40, 50 different companies where I could bring value. So I think I just had more to give. I think I was a little constrained at working in the TV industry. And just that feel good of actually being able to see results and know that I had something to do with it. Consulting was right up my alley.
Right.
I thought it was going to be a harder transition, to be honest with you, but it really wasn't. To go from a tactical kind of show manager to more of a strategic leader, I was a little worried about the transition. But very natural, and it was just like riding a horse. You just kind of got back on it, and I loved it. I loved the consulting piece.
Right. Well, and if you work anywhere near Hollywood, and I did as one of my first jobs, the pace is just a little bit different. And you think when you leave that, will it be as exciting or will I be able to transition? And what you find out is like, oh, it's no problem.
Yeah, it's so true. I mean, I remember I was in charge of a TV show there, and it was very much about what was happening in the media with talent and drama around talent. And I had one of my producers hiding in the bushes trying to get a photo of someone coming on board to do this TV show. And it's security calls me and said, Julie, you need to go down and get her out of the bushes, get her camera, get rid of the photos. And I'm thinking, is this really my life?
Right.
Am I really pulling people out of bushes and having to counsel them that it's not appropriate?
You know?
So I was definitely ready to get back to some more quote-unquote normal issues than the crazy industry issues.
So, I mean, we talked a little bit about some of the crossovers and the shared work experiences, but Lisa, maybe you could kind of answer this more specifically. Do you think your philosophy is different in any way on how you handle situations? I mean, you said you guys were good, you know, kind of good cop, bad cop, or can kind of see, you know, the different perspectives, maybe good resources for each other, but that doesn't mean you have the same philosophy in how you work with people. What do you think about that?
Sure. Yeah, I'm more patient. Julie's much more of a strong head, full forward, kind of just get it done, where I kind of sit back a little bit more and evaluate. I think we both are very similar in the way we kind of negotiate with people and mediate. But at the end of the day, she's just a little bit more stronger, forward marching type of person, where I kind of let things play out a little bit more.
Right.
Where she'll kind of manipulate and let them play out a little bit faster than I probably would. But it's good and bads to both, you know, good and bads to both. Yeah, I think she's right on point. And even as kids, that was the same role that we played. I was a little bit more aggressive. in everything, in sports and how she'll skydive, I won't, you know, right. Yeah, right. Kind of same thing. Yeah. But yet I think it is a good compliment because she'll be my check and balance. So I'll have something going on at work and here's going to be my approach. And she's like, well, maybe when I soft it around the edges a little bit. So it is a good balance. I'm the nicer twin. Let's just get that straight right now. All right. I think I'm the funnier twin. So we kind of have that balance.
There you go. Well, it's good that you guys have such a unique resource in with each other that most people don't have. Because even if you have a sibling and you're very close or you're very close in age or still a slight different, you didn't go through the exact same experiences at the same time. So you have that very unique perspective to be able to bring to each other. And maybe it's a level of trust or maybe it's just that shared experience that you had to be able to bring in. That's certainly, it's very unique.
Yes.
It's very unique. Maybe you should write a book about it or something.
Thought about that, actually.
Yes.
We have some great stories. It'd be an interesting read, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the things I've been working on is writing a book about culture, and which is going to be the next question we get into. But it is hard sometimes, though. I tell you, you think you have all these great stories, and then you want them to be perfect. It's a lot of time. So if you do it, make sure you have enough time carved out.
Exactly.
Maybe you guys can take turns on chapters or something, right?
There you go. There you go. I'll start. You finish. All right.
Perfect. Well, but see, you like to wait to see how things develop, so maybe she should start.
Right. Well, I'm not going to negotiate that with you today.
All right.
I'm just kidding.
So, you know, a question for you both about culture. We'll see who wants to jump in first. But as an HR professional, what do you see as the keys to not only getting employees to buy into the culture of the company, but how do you work it into ensure that the culture is really maintained?
Okay, well, I think it's a two-prong approach. When you have culture, it's bottom-up and top-down. And I think it's very strategic in the way you have to implement it and roll it out. And it's not just an event. I mean, culture happens over time. So, for example, for my organization, we have very long-tenured employees, and we had to go through a layoff, which was very difficult. And our culture was very strong. It's very laid back, but yet professional. Mm-hmm. We're go-getters. We play hard. We have fun. When we had the layoff, it really put a kind of a downer on everything. And then when we started to rehire, the two different cultures that we saw is the ones that were still kind of like, wow, we just went through this layoff and it was so tough and communication, you know, there's some grumbling. And then you have these new people coming in super excited to work for the company. So how do you bring back that culture that was there before, right? So it really is getting all your executive teams on board, getting your champions that are in the trenches that have been there a long time to really help bring that culture back, whether it's, you know, laid back, collaborative, open door. And it just, you got to realize it takes time. Culture takes time and it takes everybody involved to make it happen.
So, yeah. I think for me, you know, doing the consulting for so long and then stopping where I am now at the architectural firm, architects in general are pretty old school. So the culture I walked into being in an architecture firm was very, I don't know how else to put it, but just old school, kind of traditional, suit and tie. Everything was very, you know, not up with open dress code, not up with alternative work schedules, not open for kind of the new wave of, you know, hiring and retaining.
Especially
staff.
In California, that's unusual, right?
Yeah.
In different parts of the country, you would expect that, but.
Yep. Yeah. And so it was interesting. I learned a lot my first year. I did a lot of discovery, obviously, the first year about kind of what our culture was and how it got to be the way it was. And I slowly started to implement change. And that happens, like Lisa said, from top to bottom and from bottom up. So if the executive team isn't in lockstep on what the culture needs to be, it's almost going to be impossible. Mm-hmm. So we've created committees on the lower level and created committees on the top level to address this exact thing. What can we, how do we become the best place to work? I mean, how do we create that culture that everyone talks about at Google or everyone talks about at Zappos? Like, how do we do that?
Mm-hmm.
So we've been pretty successful. So in the last 5 years since I've been there, we've made a ton of changes. I think for the most part, it's a great place to work. We just actually entered OC Best Place to Work. So we'll see how that turns out for us. It's just, like I said, the top down, bottom up. I know that a vision and a mission statement, some people take that for granted, and if a company's not behind it, but when we redefined our mission and our vision, it really changed the behavior of our staff.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think people revisit that enough,
right?
And live it and talk it and walk it.
Yeah, so you have to update it. You have to think about it. You have to continue to re-communicate to people. And you both mentioned a really important concept that I've been writing about recently, which is that it is the top up and bottom up and then top down. So top down is really the leaders of the organization really need to help clarify and identify what it is that's important about the company, the mission statement, all of that. You really can't have from the bottom that happening, but you better have it being then really grown and nurtured, and all the cool things that you want to have come out of it come from the bottom, right?
Correct.
Or else it just doesn't work.
Yeah.
You know, and I've seen organizations where each of those two things has been flipped and it just goes haywire.
Yeah.
Just, I mean, it's difficult.
I've seen it a million times.
Right.
Yep.
Right. They'll forget about it. They'll leave it alone. Oh, our culture is this, right? But they're not feeding it.
Yep. And when executives don't make decisions based on your mission and your values, it becomes confusing mm-hmm. to the team. It's like, okay, we have this teamwork, you know, mission statement that's all around teamwork, and then nobody's communicating and teamwork goes out the door. So it's really important to really live, eat, and breathe those. I always think of culture kind of too like a marriage. You have to refresh it. You have to keep mm-hmm. it exciting. You have to keep it alive. And that may mean going a different place for date night, or, you know, at work, right. It may be bringing in, you know, a different incentive to keep people happy. So it's just, you just have to be creative.
Well, marriage is a really good example, because there are different stages in a marriage, right? Just mm-hmm. like there's different stages in a company. There's the before kids, there's when you have little kids, and, you know, all these other stages, and companies go through these. And if you don't adjust to those, you know, are we growing? Are we trying to stay where we're at? Are we going to bring on another division or another company? I mean, those are huge, huge things that happen. And it, right, when decisions are being made that aren't in line with that, it really is difficult. I read just recently a fascinating study, and I wish I could remember where it was done. But essentially it was that if you have to make too many decisions throughout the day that are difficult, you actually lose your willpower. So if things are not clear, if you're not understanding what you have to do, if your company culture isn't so clear that decisions are really easy to make, that they're too difficult to make because you don't really know what is this person want or that person want, then all of a sudden you just start saying yes to everything or no to everything, and it begins to get a problem. Not because you don't care, but literally you cannot make that many difficult decisions all day long. And I don't know if you've seen anything like that, but...
Makes sense every day.
Yeah.
Not just for me, but for my clients. It's, right. I mean, it's all, you hit the nail on the head.
Yeah. Well, we're here with Lisa and Julie, who are giving us a fascinating take, not only on their lives as fraternal twins in HR, but also in their own work career. And we're really enjoying it. We're going to get to our first commercial break here, and we're going to come back and learn a little bit more and see what they have to think about culture and what they're reading and all the other cool things we'd like to ask our guests about. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
When it comes to pioneers in their respective industries, we all know the Apples, Starbucks, and Trader Joe's of the world. In the realm of recruiting, Decision Toolbox is the industry's best-kept secret. With 90% of their business from referrals and repeat customers, for over 20 years, Decision Toolbox's U.S.-based team of recruiters, sourcers, professional writers, quality personnel, and tech support has perfected a Six Sigma approach to talent management. No matter the size of the project, Decision Toolbox delivers incredible results. A cost per hire less than half of what contingency firms charge. With the winning candidate presented in an average of 14 days. All with a 12-month candidate warranty. With results like that, Decision Toolbox won't be a secret for long. Visit us at www.dtoolbox.com for more information.
Imagine what it would feel like to lose everything. Your job, your home, your family, your dignity. This has happened to thousands of the men, women, veterans, and young adults we serve at Working Wardrobes. What do we do to help? We provide career development services, life skills workshops, job skills training. We provide the perfect interview outfit, and we get clients placed in jobs. Call Working Wardrobes, 714-210-2460. Donate, volunteer, invest, hire.
Welcome back to the Talent Talk Radio Show. Don't forget, you can tweet your questions to us right now at PeopleG2 with hashtag Talent Talk. You can also visit us at TalentTalkRadio.com or OCTalkRadio.net and click on the Shows tab and subscribe to have the show sent to you. So right now we are talking to Lisa and Julie, who are fraternal sisters, who are here with us in the studio, telling us all about their careers in HR. So, Julie, let's jump back in it with you and talk about, as the director of HR at SAA, because I'm not going to try to say that again. What do you see as the common thread that really helps bring out success for your employees there?
I know for me, especially the firm that I'm working with now, it's the ability to have someone kind of have your back, mentor you in your career path. Mm-hmm. So our industry is constantly changing, code updates, the way people work. We specialize in office workplace. For them to be successful, they have to know that they're continually learning. Someone's coaching them, and not just training them and coaching them, but someone's truly a mentor to them. Mm-hmm. So that's going to create success for our firm. It goes hand in hand, right? So I think that's probably part one. And part two is that we have a solid leadership team that they can look to and depend on. You know, in general, architects are not known for being great business people. I think we have some great business people in our firm that make good decisions that are fair and consistent. So if they're seeing success at the top and they're feeling mentored and coached and someone has their back, I think the success will come.
Well, and that's a good point, because mentorship is a really important part for anyone, whether you get it internally or you get it on the outside of your company. It's a really important thing to do. And a lot of people kind of coming up in the ranks of their company don't realize that people up above are actually really want to mentor. They want to do that. They think, oh, they don't have time. They're too busy. They're too important or whatever. And I always just tell people, just ask.
Right. I know. It's like drive your own career. You know, that's something that we talk about, that we have a challenge with some of the newer workforce that's coming in, is the ability to go out and get it. That word grit, right? Mm-hmm. They have grit. Can they go out and go, I want your job and I'm going to be there in 2 years. I want to see more of that. I see people come in and being not complacent, but not really driving their own career. So that's one of the first discussions I have with new hires. And we go through this new hire process, is like, where's your grit? What's your passion? Let's drive it. And finding out, it's really different for every person, even though they're all working on similar drawings and the projects are very similar. What's going to make you stand out from someone else? What's mm-hmm. your grit? So I would say that's super important.
I'm not sure if you guys have ever read any books by Marshall Goldsmith. He's a famous business writer, and he's a CEO coach for like Best Buy and Walmart. I mean, he's like the number one coach. But I had the pleasure of going. He has these little walks every once in a while. I got on a walk on this Sunday with him. And one of the things he talked about that his new book is about is that people need to really walk into the company and say, what can I do for the company? What can I do to, you know, everything is so about what can the company do for the employee, right? And it's almost gotten to the point now where they walk in and just expect it. Like they sit down, and it's almost like this visual of them putting their feet up on the desk saying, inspire me.
It's a sense of entitlement. Yeah, right. There's a lot of sense of entitlement. And it's really, it should be the other way around. But it's a culture. And we go back to culture. And how do you mm-hmm. shift? You know, you may have some great talent that come in with that thought process. But how do you talk to them about, okay, this is how we work. This is how it's going to work best for you. And getting that up front. Right. So I every year I go to USC and I talk to the real estate development class just about what happens after. So what's the interview process look like? Let's talk about your resume. And they come in and, you know, they have 20-minute conversation about how great they are. And, you know, I have to remind them, this interview is not really about you. It's about me. Mm-hmm. And you have to be able to read me and go, okay, she's checked out 10 minutes ago. I need to stop and refocus. And what is it I think she needs to hear? It's very self-absorbed. It's very much about them. And I remember seeing the glaze in their eyes the first time I said that. I think it was a group of 30. And it's like, the interview process is not about you. You have to sell me, but you have to understand my needs first instead of yours. And it was like, it was foreign. It was really foreign for them.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and for young people in general, that's not really anything new, but I think that people have now gotten to this new thing about trying to sell, you know, really sell yourself. It's this whole, like almost a branding thing. And you know, our society certainly has tweaked that and really kind of made that a little bit more of a focus. So you can see that. But yeah, I remember I've told people a lot of times, you know, the first thing when you interview, because I've probably interviewed 3,000 people for this job, is people that I, in the jobs that I had, a lot of interviews. And so the first thing I did was try to figure out why I wanted to get you out the door. Like the first 30 seconds was, what have you done wrong? Do you have dirty shoes? Is your tie horrible? Like, did you not comb your hair today? Like, you know, right? It's a, so pass that test.
Yes. The sniff test.
Right,
literally.
The sniff test, right? Yeah. Yeah. Did they take a shower? I've had a few of those. Right. And then it's like, yeah, can they find a way to connect with you? And then can they make you believe that they're going to be valuable to the company?
I'll tell you right now, I'm a firm believer that if you can connect with me on a social level and a soft skill level, I can teach you any task, any widget.
Right.
And depending on the industry you're in, there may be different views. But I want that if they're a B student, C student, totally good with that. You need to graduate at the top of your mm-hmm. class. You just need to be able to connect, talk to me, understand me. And again, reading the room. There's so many people that can't read a room. It's insane. And if you're in front of clients all day long, that's number one skill set we need, right?
Right, got to be room. And, you know, one of the other great things that people need to remember to do is to follow up. I read something recently that was like 90% of all people that get hired are the ones that followed up. And I just hired two people, and I realized they both followed up.
It's a handwritten note versus an email or versus nothing. It's nice to have that touch because there's so many candidates out there. Mm-hmm. And to be remembered, you've got to be remembered, right? And you have to do something special. I'm total agreement with you.
And what I expect from them is different based upon the job and how much you're getting paid or whatever, but something.
Right.
We don't do Skype interviews. So one of the people actually just sent me a little IM thing. You know, it was the next day. And then a few days later, just checking, they were smart because if they had emailed me in my, you know, inbox of 500 emails I haven't read yet, I probably wouldn't have seen it or paid attention. But, you know, it's a really good thing. But that's about making sure, in a good way, staying in front of the person instead of, I'm the best.
Yep.
You know, I can do all these things.
It's interesting. We've hired quite a few people in the last 2 to 3 years. So I think we've almost doubled our firm. Mm-hmm. So talk about interviewing. Mm-hmm. I have a couple I could talk about. But it is. It's like, I remember we had a group interview. So it was myself and a hiring manager and I think it was operations person. And we were sitting there, we were talking to this candidate. And I'm like, this candidate's fantastic. The candidate left and we were talking about skill set. And I said, okay, skill set aside, let's talk about soft skills, right? And they're like, okay, well, let's put her in the B pile. And I was like, oh, no, she's in the A pile. So I remembered we were personally connecting with her before the interview mm-hmm. started. And one of the ops person said, you know, well, tell me a little bit about yourself. And she mentioned that she was a dog lover. And the ops person said, oh, I have, you know, Avisha, I'm a dog lover too. And this girl, smart as she was, went back and sent everyone that talked about dog treats. So the operations person got dog treats sent to her from a candidate from the office. It's like, out in front of it, right? Right out in front. Yep. Yeah. Something as silly as dog treats.
Right. But throwing out something very personal like that, hey, I'm a dog lover, is another real soft skill. A lot of people will just say, they won't give you such a, you know, interpersonal type of a thing. They will keep it safe and stop it. You know, my best salespeople are them. I have a salesperson and she's probably listening right now. I mean, she uses the fact that she has Newfoundland dogs as her number one sales tactic. She brings up her dogs and has a conversation with dog lovers and, you know, maybe more HR people like dog lovers or dog lovers and cats, hopefully. I mean, maybe need to hire a salesperson who likes cats, but she just finds a way to connect with these people on that level, and it's great.
I have to tell you an interesting story, then I'll stop. So when we go to career fairs at Berkeley and USC and some of the top schools, all the kids are there to show you their portfolio, which they've worked on mm-hmm. so hard for the last 4 or 5 years. I mean, it is who they are. Their portfolio is their baby. They come up to the booth and they want to show you their portfolio. So we look at it. It's probably a 3 to 5 minute conversation. And to be honest with you, I don't really know a good portfolio from a bad portfolio. I'm an HR person, but what I do know is how they communicated it, right? Mm-hmm. And then sometimes I'll just say, stop. Why don't you tell me what your favorite food is? What's been your favorite movie? And they cannot answer the question. They can't shoot from the hip. They don't know how to make the transition.
Wow.
It's all about the project. So the people that can tell me their favorite book or their favorite food in a heartbeat and shoot from the hip, I'm like, okay, I kind of get them. Right. One of my favorite questions, what's the weirdest thing you ever got for Christmas? What's the weirdest thing you got? That'll tell me a lot about not just them, but their family, right? Mm-hmm. It was a studded pair of jeans when it was in the 80s or, you know, whatever it is, just to kind of lighten it up a little bit. I think people forget to be themselves. I think they're so concerned about what they're saying and what they're not saying that they just don't know how to be themselves. And that's important, especially, you know, if you're talking to maybe an engineer that's interviewing you for your skills and your talent. But when you're talking to HR people, you've got to know, you got to relate somehow, some way. So,
Yeah,
we try and throw them off guard a little bit.
Yeah, we use those questions like, what animal would you be?
Right.
You know, just something. Like you said, can they just adjust? I mean, even if they completely make it up or it doesn't make any sense, whatever. Just don't be like,
Yeah, I don't know.
A dog?
Yeah, so really smart, but yet not that personably smart. That mm-hmm. makes sense. You know, you want both.
Yeah. So, Lisa, we didn't actually get to your input on, you know, since you've been with Implicity for almost 15 years, you know, what is that common thread there at your company that really brings out success and that great culture, you know, for employees at your company?
Yeah, I think our approach and what keeps us together is just collaboration. We are very entrepreneurial spirit. We're always changing on a dime. Things are changing constantly. So to really collaborate and trust each other is huge. We have a great core team that really connects.
And we're like kind of brothers and sisters. We fight and we love each other and we hate each other. At the end of the day, we go home, we come back next day to work like nothing happened. So it's really about being open and honest and collaborating and really appreciating each other's differences. We have every race under the sun at my work, and it's just really about appreciating each other, our different viewpoints, and just working together. We don't want to clobber each other.
Right.
Well, sometimes we do when we walk out the door, but we love each other.
But it's good when you can have that kind of an open forum and you guys can fight about things and be passionate enough. But you can come back to work the next day and be fine. I think it's the founder of Amazon, Bezos, that actually tries to intentionally get people to fight at meetings to be able to get that really passionate arguments out. You know, it's almost kind of a little fire starter.
Yeah.
You know, and if you can have that and enough confidence, right, that you can be that way.
Right.
And it's not destructive. It's not over the line, but it's at least passionate.
Right. So at one of we had a recent retreat, and we all have our own different personality types. So I went out and bought a button that explained that personality. So when you hit it, everybody knew it was you. So I had the BS button because I'm always calling BS, right?
Right.
And then my CFO had a no button because she needs to say no more. And then I had my ops manager, who, God bless him, he's a sweetheart, had a button that said get her done. And we have played off those buttons for the last year. And it has just made such a difference in lightening the mood sometimes when things get heated. So it's really understanding that core group and what you need to do to get it done, but still not make it so serious where people go home and they're stressed out. So it's that fine balance.
Right. Well, only in a strong culture can you kind of have those types of things really happening. Otherwise, you have doubt and, you know, people worried all the time and really have one foot out the door.
Right.
And one foot out the door is one of the most dangerous things a company can have because people really aren't paying attention to anything that's happening.
Scary.
So, you know, everything we've been talking about is all the wonderful things that are going on at your companies. But I'm wondering, because not every company is perfect. Maybe we'll start with you, Lisa. You could let us know. Maybe what are some of the common, you know, complaints or things that you have to deal with your employees or within your culture that you really have to work on to make the company, you know, still tick?
Sure. Maybe not. So I'm not thinking so much internally, but maybe one of my largest clients, it's about 230 employees. And the biggest complaint I get is the people at the top have no idea what we go through. It's not fair. Nobody communicates. We always hear things last. How do we change that culture? Because in our mind, sometimes as management, we think we are communicating everything under the sun, but our employees are clueless. Well, a lot of times maybe we're not communicating clearly or the way they want to hear it or the way they want to see it or often enough or consistent enough.
Or in the medium they want even, right? They may want to be texted or emailed or in an in-person meeting or whatever, right?
Exactly. And so it's really tapping into how do we fix that issue? Because every client I approach is different. There's no one set way to fix that. You've got to really evaluate who you're dealing with and really just try and, you know, make things happen to hopefully please the most people at the most time. So,
right.
Yeah, I think for us, it's always communication. That's a number one issue at any survey you take or any sit down strategic meeting that you have. It's like, okay, where can we improve? It's always communication. Having multiple locations has been extremely challenging. There's always corporate and the
favorite location.
Yeah, the persona of, you know, the headquarters versus the sister companies. And how do we communicate on, I mean, I know we're all adults, but it's like, well, they get this and we don't get that over here. It's like, well, you could get that if you want it. You have a company that drives it and allows you to get creative with it. If you want to do it, mention it. Let's do it. Let's try it. So I think the multiple location has been is challenging.
Yeah, because that's a subculture within a larger culture. And if your larger culture is not really, really strong, the subcultures start taking over.
Yep, that's exactly what happens.
Yeah, I mean, we all think about the big ones, the Zappos and the Googles and all that, and they have multiple locations, and so that's really strong. But we all can't be Google and Zappos, right? I mean, that's just, it's impossible. You have to be what's the best culture for your company, what's, you know, really going to work for you. And that may not be as sexy, right, as some of those other ones. But if it works well, that's what's important. So.
And then also taking that into consideration when you hire. Most hiring managers don't think about culture. They think about getting the job done.
Mm-hmm.
How is this person going to add or deplete part of the culture that we're starting to build? So I think that's a big part of the hiring structure that gets missed by some folks, is that how is this person really going to contribute? I know when I hire someone and they have a big personality, they're going to be right in the middle of all the company functions and want to do all of those cool things, right?
So. Yeah, before we really made culture a huge focus for us, I remember hiring a young lady who was, I mean, just, she was a very fast typer. She was a very hard worker. I mean, everything about her, if you look at from that perspective, was perfect. And she did a very good job. She drove everyone in the office crazy. And it was just, it was a big lesson for me, you know, very early on in the company that I have to remember they have to fit into, you know, it's fine if they drive them crazy in a good way, maybe if they're pushing them, but this was just like nails on a chalkboard. And that was tough.
We've all had those. Yeah. We have more than one.
And you're like, what was I thinking?
Yeah. No, we just blamed the other one. It was your fault.
Right. Well, I know we have coming up here on our next commercial break, but I think we have time for maybe one more question. And that is, you know, what do you see as your biggest challenge, you know, kind of really facing human resources professionals today as we really move from what you both identified as a very tactical approach early on in your careers to more strategic now? You're meeting with a CEO and you're really shaping the direction of the company, how people interact. What do you really see as those biggest challenges that you have to deal with maybe now or coming up in the future?
I think it's technology and how fast technology is moving. Mm-hmm. And depending on, you know, the owners of your company or the executive team, are they comfortable with the way technology is changing business? You know, I talk to my hiring managers about different resources through LinkedIn or what, and it's just like, I've never used it before. I don't want whatever it may be. So I think it's keeping up with the times because it's moving so quickly. Some of them don't know what a Twitter feed is. You know, some right. of them like don't know you can recruit that way. And so it's just that old school still mentality to some degree. And entrepreneurs are out getting business and they want to worry about getting business and not necessarily keeping up with the change in times.
Yeah. I think compliance too, as we see like mm-hmm. Obamacare come in, it's so complex now and you really need an expert internally to deal with all of that. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things our company does, but it truly requires an expert these days to be in HR. You have California, which is the toughest state to do business in, right, from an employment standpoint, because there's just so many regs, CFRA and FMLA and all those other things you have to deal with. So the complexities are really critical to have someone that can answer those and know what they're talking about and implement and right. maintain. So we really kind of become almost the company checkbook, if you will, because if we don't do our job, our company's writing a check, whether mm-hmm. it's a harassment suit or, you know, it's a Department of Labor claim. So it really is to kind of, I call myself the CYA department, yeah. right? We have to really cover the company to make sure that we're not going to be sued somewhere down the road.
Yeah. So. And that's a huge, huge part. I mean, we talk to HR managers all the time about, you know, in our business, people will go and buy some cheap background check off the internet. And it's like, and then they come back to us and go, but I didn't find anything. And now this person's suing us. And it's like, well.
I had a client of mine, they decided they were going to do random drug testing. Mm-hmm. And their way of random drug testing was everyone that was in the office that day, their name went in a hat and they pulled out the name and that's who got random drug tested that day.
Yeah, I'm so not sure that follows
the law.
Yeah.
No, not really. No. I was like, oh, that's really creative, but probably a better way to do that.
We're going to have more great stories when we come back from our last commercial break here. We'll be right back.
When it comes to pioneers in their respective industries, we all know the Apples, Starbucks, and Trader Joe's of the world. In the realm of recruiting, Decision Toolbox is the industry's best-kept secret. With 90% of their business from referrals and repeat customers, for over 20 years, Decision Toolbox's U.S.-based team of recruiters, sourcers, professional writers, quality personnel, and tech support has perfected a Six Sigma approach to talent management. No matter the size of the project, Decision Toolbox delivers incredible results. A cost per hire less than half of what contingency firms charge. With the winning candidate presented in an average of 14 days. All with a 12-month candidate warranty. With results like that, Decision Toolbox won't be a secret for long. Visit us at www.dtoolbox.com for more information.
Imagine what it would feel like to lose everything. Your job, your home, your family, your dignity. This has happened to thousands of the men, women, veterans, and young adults we serve at Working Wardrobes. What do we do to help? We provide career development services, life skills workshops, job skills training. We provide the perfect interview outfit, and we get clients placed in jobs. Call Working Wardrobes, 714-210-2460. Donate, volunteer, invest, hire.
Welcome back to the Talent Talk Radio Show. We're here with our guests today, Lisa and Julie, who are, as we mentioned, sisters, fraternal sisters, and they both ended up in HR, and they've had, so far, very fascinating stories to tell us. So let's jump right back into it. Having been in positions dealing in human resources for as long as you both have, how have you really seen the role of HR change or evolve over time? And we talked a little bit about that tactical versus strategic, but I thought maybe you might have some really good examples or some good perspectives on, you know, really what those changes are and have those changes been for the better?
Sure. I think, you know, starting off even back to our days at Price Club, it was you were the complaint department, you checked time cards, and you planned the company picnic. Now we're at a point in our career where people look to us to strategically hire people, have compensation plans, set up succession planning. How are you training your people? What are your associate development plans? How are we getting the most out of our people with the least amount of money? How can we add to our bottom line but have A players? So it's really being creative on how to retract and attract and retain employees, and really just about the dollars and cents and the metrics around HR, everything from turnover to compliance to, you know, benefit costs. So there's just in workers' comp, the risk. So there's just so many different facets to it. I think now being strategic, we can really show them that, hey, if you don't have a good person in my job, you're going to be paying some money. What does it cost not to have someone talented? Mm-hmm. So instead of how much does it cost to bring someone and handle this for us?
Right.
Yeah. Also, I think there's way upside. I think people now, like Lisa said, are really starting to see the value of a strategic partner. And I think also even society seeing HR as a different position, meaning we are known to suck money out of companies. So what's it going to cost to do one more initiative, or what's it going to cost to do one more, you know, all hand meeting or some type of incentive? And you know, there's so many programs out there. For example, we are a part of the ETP program where we actually get money back from the state for training. So there's opportunities for HR to actually bring in revenue nowadays, right? So a fantastic program, not many people know about unless you're, you know, an experienced HR person. So I think with that, and again, knowing that we bring value to the bottom line and they can see it and you can explain it clearly. I think, you know, as we progressed in our careers, you really start to see the bottom line, the cents and the dollars, and to be able to communicate it and show it from like a benefit cost perspective. Or most owners didn't know back in the day what a true work comp injury costs. Like, what is an XMOD? What does that mean? So everyone's just becoming much more educated.
Yeah. I guess what we've observed is a bigger change since this last recession, that really kind of like people shed a lot of things they didn't think they needed, and then they got themselves into trouble, and then they really had to rely on maybe a much more strategic person. I mean, have you seen that at all kind of play out in either your organizations or your clients?
We were just talking about that, and that was one of our challenges, I would say, over the last 5 or 6 years is doing more with less. Mm-hmm. And how long can people do that? Are we burning our people out because we're trying to figure out how many hats this person can wear and what makes sense and who can we put in this seat and who can we have do this? So it's been one of our biggest challenges is really trying to figure that out. When now is the time to hire? You know, is our company making money? We know we're strapped here. We laid too many people off here. So it's been a big challenge, I think, not just for the two of us sitting here, but most HR people out in the world. Yeah, I agree. I think HR and operations are really intertwined quite a bit since that happened, because we look a lot about process now, right? So if things are going well, you don't worry too much about process, and you kind of have a feeling you might need additional help or to reduce. But I think HR people are getting much more involved in the process of working and the process of work. You know, now the big thing is to get lean certified. What does that mean to get lean certified? It's like, well, it's important. So would it be, whether it's hiring people, how to get to the fastest decision making, or if you're working on a project to get the project in the door and out the door, HR is actually now a part of that bigger picture.
Right, right. And then that's really important. Lisa, I think you brought up a point about that kind of wearing multiple hats, and that can be a difficulty. That can be nice when you're lean, right? You want people who can do lots of different things. But what I've tended to notice is that when you really have growth and really good movement in a company, you actually have people who are more specialists, who can really do, you know, a great job at something, as opposed to doing an okay job at this and an okay job at that. And okay, you know, it's almost that mediocrity that can really keep companies from getting to that next level.
Right. And that's what our company, I don't mean to plug us, but that's what we do. We have specialists
plug
in every
away.
Okay, we have specialists in every area. So for example, our HR people do investigations, they do employee relations, they help fire, they do some other things, but those are the main things. Companies don't know how to do that. We have people that specialize just in benefits. So they're experts in, you know, the affordable health care. And then we have experts that are handling our safety and our injuries and our illnesses and completing all the compliance on that side. And then with people that just do payroll all day long. So it's just when you have those expertise in the department, it can make you so much more efficient as a company. Because a generalist is good, don't get me wrong. Generalists are good, but they're just that, generalists. And when you are a company of 10 or 10, you know, a million, you still need someone that's going to be an expert. So our company is really good about bringing that value to the table.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about employee management and leadership development. Julie, from a talent and leadership development perspective, what are some of the things that you do to help, you know, develop talent within your organization?
We do a couple things. The most interesting one I think we do now is something called a stay interview. So we're finding their turnover is going to happen. And in the architectural industry, it's a really small kind of tight-knit. So we see turnover often. So we thought, what can we do to get in front of that to build talent, retain them, and have great, you know, producing employees? So we've implemented what's called a stay interview, which is very similar to an exit interview. So my specialist actually lives in another state. So she worked here for quite some time, but she's built a really good connection with our staff. And I know it sounds like a different model, but because she's remote, she comes to visit. They know her. They worked with her prior before she moved, but she's built this great relationship with our folks. So she'll do what's called a stay interview. So basically she gets in front of any issues. Tell me what's going on right now. You know, how are you being managed? If you could change anything in your team, what would you change? What would make you leave? What's something that would make you, is it money? Is it, I mean, we don't want to talk people into leaving, but we get right to the root of kind of how they're feeling at the moment in the firm. It's been hugely successful for us to get in front of any issues.
Oh, that sounds like a great initiative. Probably something you could even put in there as well.
I stole that initiative from her.
That's great.
Yeah.
So before we run out of time here, we do want to ask one of our favorite questions, and that is, what are you reading right now, or at least what book might you suggest to those people listening?
I am not reading a business book right now, but I am reading a great mystery thriller from James Patterson. But if I had to recommend a good business book or my favorite one, it'd be Good to Great. It just was a real kind of down to earth, what makes people successful. And it was about people. I love that book. I would recommend it to anybody.
Good to Great. And is that the one where he talks about having the BHAG?
Mm-hmm, correct.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Big, hairy, audacious goal.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
I just recently read The Noticer by Andy Andrews. Mm-hmm. And it's about perspective. Perspective on people, perspective on the situation in front of you. It's really, it goes deep inside everyone, who you are as a person and how that comes out in your leadership role. So your past experiences are going to bring that to the workplace and how to really see that in others, other people's perspectives, and become a better team based on that.
Oh, those are wonderful suggestions, and we really appreciated having you both here. Lisa, how can people find out more about your company if they're interested in learning more?
Sure. If you just go to our website, www.implicity.com, you'll see all of our services and different service models that we have.
Will you spell that out for us for those that are maybe challenged
with
that?
Sure. Okay. EMPLICITY.com.
Great. And Julie, how about you?
Sure. I'm not going to make them type out Schlemmer, Algazi & Associates. So it's www.saaia.com.
All right. A little bit easier. SAAIA.com.
Got it.
Wonderful. Well, thank you both so much for being here. We really appreciate you being a part of our slightly altered show format today, but it really worked out well. You're a wonderful guest. And hopefully we can have you back either together or separately down the road, and you can let us know how you're doing.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
So that's about the time we have today. Thank you again to my guests, Lisa Pinkard and Julie Wolf. Tune in next week at the same time, 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, where we'll have Joel Bigley, the SVP of Worldwide Operations and Business Execution at Deluxe Media, share his thoughts on talent, leadership, and culture. Until then, do what you love and show the world how talented you can be today.
You've been listening to Talent Talk Radio Show, brought to you by People G2, a company dedicated to helping you with your human capital needs.